All right. Welcome to episode one of the Beer Pinions podcast. My name is Patrick Berger, owner of Kaiser Tiger and Patty Long's, and with me is my co-host, Bruce White, owner of the Chicago Beer Tours.
All right. Hi, everybody. How you doing?
And here on the Beer Pinions podcast, we are going to take a subject and flog it like a fucking dead horse. This week is beer bars. And what makes a beer bar and why, in a very oversaturated beer market, they're still important and still relevant. With us is our expert guest. He wears many hats in the Chicago beer scene. Most importantly, he is the manager, beer buyer, bartender extraordinaire at the world-famous Map Room, one of the greatest beer bars on the planet. He is also co-owner of Draft Science, a beer draft maintenance and installation and cleaning service. How's it going, Jay?
Doing great. What's up, guys?
Oh, you know, just doing a podcast. Apparently, proving a theory I always sort of surmise that any idiot can buy some recording equipment and do a podcast.
Here we are.
I know, right? Living proof. Living proof. All right, so beer bars. I like to think I'm, know a thing or two, owning a couple of beer bars myself. Chris, you are leading beer tours throughout Chicago, going to different beer bars.
Right.
Bringing sort of a more of a patron perspective to this topic, which is nice. And then, of course, Jay runs one of, in my opinion, one of the best beer bars known to man, the Map Room. Here's the thing. Everybody is serving good beer now, right? I mean, you go into TGI Fridays and they've got a couple of nice beers, you know? You go into any average sports bar and there is going to be some top-notch, world-class quality beer on tap. What, in this day and age, makes us go, you know, to really truly get a proper pint, I've got to go to a beer bar. Let's see if we can't get maybe a couple of things that make beer bars something different, something better than the average out there. What do you think, Jay?
For me, it really all comes down to does the owner, do the people there give a shit? Do they care about the beer?
Give it a shit. Definitely important.
Gotta give a shit.
You do.
it's really the biggest thing. You're taking care of the beer. You know, you can't control how it gets to your place, but once it gets to your place, do you have, you know, someone taking care of your beer lines? Very important. Staff, are they knowledgeable? Can they steer you to, you know, if someone gives them something to go on, can they give them the right recommendation?
Staff training.
Very important. And I'm somewhere and I'm in a beer bar and I get a pint of delicious beer that someone slaved over and it's a 3.5-inch head 2 inches away from the top of the glass. Service is important.
Yeah,
or no head.
All
there's
the way
that
to the top with no bubbles at all.
You can't pick it up without dumping it all over the bar.
Right.
Yeah.
I find it funny that so far you haven't mentioned the kind of beer on tap, right? You haven't mentioned having crazy whales and crazy draft selection and all the rest of it. How important is that, do you think?
As easily as you can do a podcast, you can steal someone else's list. So someone could look at Kaiser Tiger's list and go, man, they're known to have some pretty good beer. I'm just going to pour what they pour, and everything will be cool. And to some extent, that can work, but
I think I did that with the Map Room when we opened that
house. Like, well, I'm flattered.
I know Jay's pouring all these. I'm putting these on. But, yeah, that's the easiest part, isn't it? I mean, we all have salesmen breathing down our neck every day with new beers, and a lot of them are very good. Some of them aren't, you know. But I don't think it takes a genius to figure out which are good and which aren't. But you're right. It's good beer is so plentiful, so available. It's hardly what sets these bars apart, or what, you know, what's truly important anymore. I mean, I'd rather go in a bar and see some very easy to get beers, maybe, you know, Sierra Nevada, New Belgium, you know, I don't care what it is, stuff I can get at 7-Eleven. If it's poured through clean lines by a staff that gives a shit and in a clean glass, I'm a happy guy, you know? That's all I need. And those bars are never going to be called beer bars, you know? Oh, you don't have, you know, Surly Darkness on tap this week, which, by the way, we will have on tap at Patty Long's. Nice. Tomorrow night. Yeah, cheap plug, although God knows when this podcast goes out. It'll probably be long gone. So, but yeah, I mean, good beers become so ubiquitous and so easy to get. I'm glad those were not any of the things that you mentioned at first, but it is important. You do have to have a killer tap list, right?
If you're going to do it yourself, if you're not going to just, you know, leech off of someone else, balance to me is the most important thing. You know, there's always going to be people looking for IPAs and the biggest and baddest stout, but there's always going to be someone looking for, you know, an easy drinking lager.
Right.
And, you know, those are getting a little easier to find. Local places are actually doing decent lagers these days. So that's pretty cool. But for me, it's about balance, you know.
And lagers still sell. Everyone thinks IPA is dominating the world, but guess what? In my top three sellers, there's a lager in there every month.
Yep.
Well, I think craft beer-wise, Pilsners went up. Pilsners are like the biggest growing craft beer category right now. Year over year, it's like over 100% growth in the craft beer Pilsner category. So,
I know, I've been saying for 10 years that the next big thing in craft beer is lagers. And I've been wrong for 9 of those years. But I think I'm finally right. People are catching on. And guess what? Lagers are really fucking thirst quenching. They're clean. You can have a whole bunch of them, which is important to me. I like to have a whole bunch of beer. And, you know, it's not anti-craft to enjoy a good Pilsner. It's not. If anything, and you know, and I think maybe the reason there haven't been as many lagers in the craft beer market is that they're really hard to make. They're really fucking hard to make. And, you know, they take more time. They take more precision. And quite frankly, the two most popular beers in the craft beer world are, you know, the Russian Imperial Stout and the Double IPA. Those are the easiest fucking beers to make. The easiest.
Cover up anything, right?
Yeah, they cover up any mistake you make. Just add a whole bunch of fucking malt and a whole bunch of hops. It's easy. I mean, you know.
It's easy to get a 99 on great beer with one of those beers, too.
Yeah, yeah. That's the only way you can get a 99.
All right. Jay, to your point, this reminds me when you were talking about, like, just the, in terms of the I think it was great that you started with kind of the passion that the bars have and how the knowledge that they have. And it reminds me, I was up on Mackinac Island and at a pub up there, and kind of Guinness. Guinness is like one of those beers that if you have any knowledge, you know how to pour. And you know that you shouldn't pour it the standard way that a lot of beers are poured. A lot of times it's poured in stages. And, you know, sure enough, was up on Mackinac Island, and the bartender, who was very nice, the tap's high, the glass is low, pours it, walks away, texts her boyfriend, and I'm like, just like, no, you know, like, you know, and I think that Guinness is a beer that's been around for a long time, not really an American craft beer. The knowledge that you train your staff with is so important when it comes to that, and it makes a difference in terms of the flavor and taste, so I definitely agree. And when we go in, you can always tell the bars that are there that have a beer list because they think it's a good business decision versus the bars that have good beer because they really care about it and think it's going to be also a good beer business decision. But that care really, really goes a long way.
Absolutely.
You know, we used to call that the lazy pint. And Guinness, really, they don't get enough credit. I certainly don't give them much credit. But they it's a great beer. It really is. And they went around and said to people, look, there's a proper way to pour our beer. And you know what? Guess what? There's a proper way to pour every beer. But they went around and said, they educated bartenders. And they, you know, said, you have to pour it with this kind of gas combination. You have to, you know, do a three-quarter pull and let it settle and all the rest. That's all beer education. And, you know, I think we're getting much better in all of that, but we're still a little lacking as far as teaching bartenders that there is a proper way to pull a pint.
Yeah. While we're on that subject, for everybody out there, the Guinness gas that everyone uses in their beer bar makes your beer flat. So knock it off. If you're not pouring a nitro beer, pour not 25% CO2 gas, because there's no way to carbonate beer properly if you do that.
You're talking about the blend tanks?
The McDanum blend boxes are the way to go. But you can get gas where it's 24% CO2 and 25% nitrogen.
No, you're talking about
gas. Those are only meant for nitro beers. There is a company out there that does a 60-40 blend, which is ideal for most draft systems. But yeah, if you're using Guinness gas on your entire draft system, you're not doing your beer or anyone else any favors. So there's my little side note.
The more you know.
Thank you, Jay.
And where were we going? We were talking about...
ordering beer. Sure. You want to go into ordering beer?
No.
This pause brought to you by JJ Akowski of the Mapper. By the way, if you hear a lot of background noise, we are live here. Well, not live. You're listening to it taped. But we are recording live at Patty Long's. So if you hear some people enjoying themselves, that's what's happening. So back to gas. Let's go back to gas. Let's go back to draft systems, because you do own a draft company.
Yep.
You take this shit very seriously, I know, because you service both of my bars. A lot of bar owners install these things. They install, you know, a $20,000 draft system and then proceed to not know anything about them. And then they go and hire a draft line cleaning company, who, quite frankly, you know, are ripping them off, aren't they? I mean, I was getting ripped off before you came along. It took one inspection of my draft system and taking apart one faucet for you to go, this is, you know, look what's going on, you know. And I thought I was on top of my guy. I knew a little bit more about draft systems than your average bar owner. I made sure to schedule him on days that I was here. I was actually going through and checking what he did, and I would catch him, you know, not running, because I have a separate two-tower line, and occasionally I would catch he would not, you know, do the separate run on those. And obviously he wasn't cleaning my faucets and a bunch of other things. And I really thought I was on top of it, but I wasn't. And he, you know, quite frankly, for everyone else who was out there, he was one of the better ones. I mean, there were people doing a lot worse jobs. I get a lot of people asking me, you know, how do you get the beer so clean? You know, I'm paying this guy. He's here every 2 weeks by law, you know. And my first question is always, well, how long does he take to clean your lines? And they're like, oh, he's there at least an hour. I'm like, well,
that is the question.
Yeah, he's not fucking doing his job then. You can't do it in an hour, can you?
You could do six in an hour.
Yeah.
That's the question. If you want to know if your guy, your line cleaner, is doing his job, it takes on average about an hour to do six lines. So if you've got, you know, a 24-tap system and your guy's in and out of there in an hour, he ain't doing shit.
I mean, a lot of these guys are just running water through. Some of them are doing half of your lines every time they come in, and you're basically paying them, you know, twice as much as you should. And no one notices, because no one knows dick about draft lines when it comes to bar ownership and front of house management.
And they don't think it's something that they should spend money on to learn about, which is ludicrous. It's just insane. You know, and there's a couple of companies out here doing the right thing. We were getting screwed back in the day by our guy.
And that's what led you to start cleaning the Map Rooms lines on your own, right?
Yeah, that's what happened. Me and my partner in draft science, Brandon, we took a class at Siebel. We took the draft class, And after that, we had a guy come do a demonstration for us. And, you know, he hooked up his machine and he ran some chemical through. And he's like, man, this is, your guy ain't doing shit for you. But he was there to take a check every 2 weeks. So I know that's still going on out there. It's hard if you don't know what's going on to catch them, to know really what they're supposed to be doing. The best way, if they're for a half hour, and, you know, no matter how many taps you have, if they're in and out in less than a half hour, they're not doing their job. It's that simple. So,
right.
That's
and you can have the best beer on tap all day long, and if it's poured through a dirty draft line, don't fucking bother. You know.
And the consumer's getting wiser. People are, their palates are evolving, they're learning.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, so, you know, my knowledge is more of the the beer tour, like, coming into bars. But I know, doing research, reading various beer books and whatever, that clean draft lines are so important. And we've all had it where we've had beer with tainted draft lines. Like, when you guys made the switch, figured out that perhaps your lines weren't as clean as they should be, and you started your own thing, how... Like, did you get some feedback right away?
The Alpha King tastes funny.
Really?
That was the biggest one.
Okay.
Yeah, the Alpha King doesn't taste right. Like, well, sorry, you know, our bad, but yep. That was it.
But it tastes like it should be, and that was the problem?
It tasted right. Like it should after we cleaned up the lines, yep.
Cool. Awesome. Well, and, you know, I just wanted to get back to beer bars in a second, too, because I was thinking kind of, what I judge beer bars, and I'm curious on your thoughts as working in the bar industry. There are a lot of bars now that are coming, that are opening up, and they're like, oh my God, we got 100 taps, 150 taps, you know, like, holy smokes. And whenever I was thinking about what makes a great beer bar great, the number of taps is probably the last thing on my list. Because, you know, I think, again, that kind of reflects a lot of times more of a corporate, they seem to have a corporate feel to them, and that's not the most important thing. And when I was thinking about was not just institutional knowledge, bar knowledge, but also a variety. And we go into bars on our beer tours where, you know, there'll be eight taps, but they have a great, what I would consider, they're a great beer bar, they have a great list, 10 taps, because they will have a great variety within those eight drafts online. And they'll also, then the other things I was thinking of is kind of a local focus. That's always a good thing, to the extent possible, and that's not to mean that there aren't great beers outside of your location, and then regularly rotating your beers as well. And I was thinking that those are some of the things that I was thinking of that kind of came to my mind. Curious on your thoughts on that.
I'll jump in on that real quick. If I see 100 taps, first thing I'm doing is trying to figure out what's selling, because I don't want to drink a 2 or 3 month old keg.
Yeah, I'll just ask the bartender, what'd you tap this week? And it's usually only 2 or 3 things.
Yeah, you just, it doesn't matter how big your venue is, you cannot go through 100 taps.
You can't.
You can't keep it fresh.
You know.
Something is not going to be okay.
You can be Wrigley Field selling an absolute shit ton of beer, and if you give us 120 options, you know, 10 of them are going to, they're going to flow like mad, and then the rest of them really aren't, you know? There aren't, you know, there's a small segment of the population that wants really esoteric, weird beers. You know, I think we're all probably in that population. But then if you give me 120 esoteric weird beers, I'm not going to try more than a couple, you know? I mean, if I even do that. So it is an absolute red flag. And, you know, we're in America where everyone thinks bigger is better and more is better and all of that. And funny enough, I was on vacation with the family last week, and my mom, very far removed from the beer world, you know, but knows that, you know, I have a beer bar, and said, you know, how many beers? My mom doesn't sound like this, by the way, at all. Pat, how many beers are you serving now at Kaiser Tiger? And I was like, oh, we got, you know, 24 on tap, and we got about, you know, 20 in a bottle. Well, that's not very many, you know. Once again, doesn't sound like that. And because that's, you know, she thinks it's a beer bar, it should have 1,000 beers, and we've all been to those places, you know. But the fact is, you're not going to get a fresh beer, you know. It's impossible. It's just mathematically impossible.
Yeah, and even, you know, beyond the taps, I get it all the time. Like, you know, you're at Map Room. Oh man, how many beers do you guys have? I'm like, 26 taps, a hand pull, and what? Only 26 taps. Yep, 26 well picked, very thoughtful, fresh taps. And then the bottle side, we have about 150, which I've shrunk down from about 300 because, well, they just don't move. And I'm moving towards, if I have something in bottle that I know is not going to sell very well, then it's going to have to be a, you know, a Belgian quad or, you know, right, something that will stand the test of time.
Yeah. You know, something that just gets better after sitting in your basement for a couple of years.
I have, you know, Pivo Pills and Headwaters, or not Headwaters, sorry, Pivo Pills and Prima Pills in the bottle, can, but I move through more than a case a week.
Right.
That stuff's fresh. It's...
Thanks, AJ.
Thanks, AJ.
Shout out to AJ on the podcast. Drinks a lot of Pivo cans.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's... I think that bangs it on the head, and you're right, it's the corporate places. One just opened here in Lakeview with 120 taps or some shit and, you know, a couple hundred bottles or something. And guess what? You're not going to find me in there. You know, that shit is going to sit.
Yep.
Plain and simple. And, it's the same mentality that my mom had, you know, of someone that knows absolute jack shit about beer putting together... a beer bar. That's what my mom would have done. Congrats, Hopcat or whatever you're called. Way to go. You know, you've got the same beer knowledge as my mom. Congrats. Just, she drinks Limerita, by the way.
I just love that your mom was throwing shade at you. That just makes me happy.
That's a good woman.
She loves the Limerita. She's like, Pat. I'm a man of 1,000 voices. Pat, what? You know, what, these Limeritas, I have like 3 of them, and I don't know, I have to take a nap. I'm like, yeah, Mom, because they're fucking like 9% or something, you know? Uh-huh. Oh, is that high?
No, I'm a strawberry Rita guy personally, so. throw that shit over some ice. Yeah. Strawberry Rita, oh man, so good.
We all drink pink, you know, that's the...
And that just goes to show you the other side of it. You don't have to be a snobbish asshole to be a fan of beer. You know, no, if somebody right. wants to drink an old style and they'd appreciate it, they'd let them drink it and don't give them any shit because, you know, keep that shit cold and it tastes just fine.
That's right. It's all better than water, right?
It's all better than water. It's cleaner than water. Can't make you sick.
That's right.
Well, a 12-pack of strawberry Ritas will get you.
The sugar alone.
The sugar alone. All the artificial stuff. But seriously, on talking about, like, the corporate and all that and... I know one man who has 76 taps. He actually gives a shit. And he owns the Flying Rock out in Denver. And I've never known anyone that has anywhere near that many taps who actually really does care. You know, I don't know exactly what Hopleaf has. I know they have quite a few, maybe 60 or so.
Yeah, he's kind of smart about it, Hopleaf, though. Because, like,
absolutely.
I think he splits it up between the rooms. So he doesn't... You're never facing... a choice of all of his taps. I think if you're in one room, you know, you got a choice of 20 whatever. If you're in another room, you got a choice of 20 whatever. Yeah,
they'll run around and grab you one from the other side.
Oh, yeah.
But okay. The display is not there in your face.
Right. And he goes through an ass ton of beer.
He goes through an ass ton of beer.
As do you. Like, Patty Longs cannot handle 26 taps, you know. We have 18. That's enough. In the slow months, it's too many. You know, the map room is the same size as Patty's, but you guys... You know, all you do is crank beer. And it's different for each bar. But 150, I don't care if you're Wrigley Field. You're going to have dead kegs. You're going to have shitty beer, period.
Yep. So when you're judging a beer bar, it's not size that matters. It's quality and definitely having a diverse lineup.
What do you guys think about in terms of kind of the local, especially here in Chicago, you know, we've... boom in craft beer the last, really, 6 years. But, of course, been before that. Like, do you find that consumers are demanding more local beer? And I know you guys have supported the local market yourselves as well. But how do you find that that's important in terms of a beer bar, like having that right mix of local versus, obviously, there's great national and international beers, too, that you don't want to that you want to make sure you serve as well. So just curious on how you kind of make those calls.
Well, I mean, I'll say first of all, local does not equal better. At the same time, in Chicago, we have a lot of local breweries. And a lot of them are very good. And you tend to build relationships with those people because you know them, you see them, they come into your bar. And that's important. You know, we're doing a field trip next week with my employees where we're visiting three local breweries because we sell this beer. I want them to see the people who make it, to make that relationship with them, and to know, to have seen where this beer is made and how it's made. And that's all, you know, that all goes back to staff training and whatnot. But you're right. I mean, the local trend in Chicago is kind of recent because when I opened Patty Long's, we didn't have any real local beer. We had Goose and, you know, of course, Three Floyds, which is actually in Indiana, but we all claim it's in Chicago. And and that was, you know, that was about, you know, city limit-wise, for a little while, Goose was the only, I think, actual brewery in the city of Chicago. We had a few in the suburbs. So when it exploded, yes, that's when the demand started. You know, there's a whole local vor movement and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, we get a lot of tourists, and they want to, you know, certainly when I'm traveling, I want to taste the local flavors. What have you experienced, Jay?
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, 8 years ago, I mean, we had Metropolitan and Goose, I think. You know, as far as actually,
I think we had Metro.
Was Metro
seven
now?
Years old
are they
something?
Seven?
Yeah.
And we had Peace, but they don't distribute.
They don't distribute. So. Yeah, we had a bunch. We had a couple brew pubs. They're only maybe 6 years old, seven tops. So yeah, I mean.
And they were when they came into the market. They were.
They were contracting.
They were contract brewing, and the place they were contracting out of wasn't making, you know, super delicious beer. I remember the first time they had, we actually brewed this at our place. I'm like, holy shit, that's
oh,
really
nice
good.
Day, wasn't
that's
it?
A good. That's a good recipe. Wow.
Yeah.
Good job, yeah, guys. I'll buy some of that. You know.
They brought me like those original contract bottles, and I was like, no thanks.
Yep.
And then once they started making their own beer, and I tasted some, and, you know, I was late on the half-acre train, and they were like, sorry, we're not opening any new accounts.
Oh!
Wah, wah. But, yeah. You know, they came a-calling again, and great brewery. We love supporting them.
Yep, good guys. You know, now that there's all these options, all these local things, you know, of course I want to support local, but I don't want to just turn my back to, you know, all the old school breweries that, you know, Anchor, Sierra, North Coast, all these places, those just happen to all be out on the West Coast, but they laid the groundwork for all these other people. They did the hard
they
work.
They did. I mean, you know, Lagunitas is a perfect example of a brewery that came into the Chicago market before we had any of our own breweries, really, except Goose, and they were shipping some really good beer here, and it was just the perfect timing to hit the Chicago market. You try to do that now, you try to be a regional brewery in another part of the country and try to bust in the Chicago market, forget it. It's not happening. Good luck. Lagunitas came in. People thought it was a local beer because it was so ubiquitous through Chicago. And, of course, now it is a local beer. But they got in there right at the perfect time. And you can't do that today, I don't think. There's no room.
No, I agree with you. You know, you're talking about, like, people and building relationships and all of that with your reps. You know, I buy from people that I see, people that come talk to me. And
absolutely.
Bring me samples is important, but I just hang out and actually have a conversation. Those are the people that I'm trying to support.
There's so many now. You don't have to chase beer anymore as a beer buyer. I mean, I don't chase anything. And I tell all the reps, squeaky wheel gets the grease, man, because I get in here, I'll do the inventory, figure out what I need, and then the first person who walks through the door is going to get those placements because everyone has good shit.
I need a wheat something, I need an IPA, and I need a stout.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, you've got a stout. Awesome. It was good. Let's do it.
Right.
Piece of cake.
Right.
But the beer has to be solid. You know, is it all going to be the best IPA you've ever tasted? No. But that's also subjective. You know,
Right. I mean, I say no to beer that might be the best beer I tasted that week because I don't have room for it. Or, you know, I have too many IPAs right now, or I have too many of this or that. You know, it wasn't like that 8 years ago. It was, you know, we were chasing beer. We were calling whoever we could call, you know. My Windy City rep did not visit me. He never came in. I had to call in any order I had from them. And it was, the demand was way outpacing the supply. And now we're on the opposite end. Makes our job a little easier, I think.
It's easier, except for those tasting days.
I know. Oof. I know. Right? Oh,
it gets, gets a little slippery sometimes.
Oh, so painful. I had to taste 30 beers today. Shut up, Jay. Man up.
Well, to quote you, Pat, in one of your blogs you wrote, I drink shitty beer so you don't have to, and I don't think people understand how true that is.
It is, actually.
There's a lot of shitty beer comes through my hands, and I taste it because
if you guys need to help
my job.
Next time, just give me a call. You know, I'll be there.
Map Room Fridays, 3 to 5. Come on by. Everyone else does. Gary Valentine, I'm talking to you.
I like the personal shout-outs. This is good. This is good.
All good people, man. All good people.
What do you guys think in terms of, like, getting the right mix of beers? Do you just, at this point, I imagine you just kind of know what you want. It's probably, I'm just, you know, in terms of, like, I want this many IPAs, this many, you know, this kind of experimentals, this many lagers, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, the way I do it, I have, like, a spreadsheet, and the top of it, it's like, you know, Belgian strong dark, Belgian pale, sour, you know, Saison, you know, the general 20-some styles that kind of fit a general spot. And when I'm doing my list, it's kind of easy. Like, I'm running out of this IPA, I need another one, that's easy. But then those other kind of weird ones, I don't always have an alt beer on, but it's one of those styles that I want to have sometimes, you know. So I type all my beers in under those columns so I can see what I'm missing. Like, oh, all right, shit, I'm heavy on dark beer right now, and it's August. Let's remedy that a little bit or whatever. That's how I do it. I just try to keep a really good open style. And I think importance are importance. Importance are import. You heard it here, ladies and gentlemen. I get another dovetail, please.
Yeah. Someone get Jay a beer.
No, but that's been a big part, you know, of my place. It's always been heavy imports, and that's because 23, 24 years ago, it was Anchor Sierra and imports. There wasn't shit.
I always tell the story of, so the map room, and I think you still do, but you had three chalkboards back in the day. One was Belgian drafts, one was import drafts, and one was American drafts.
Yep.
The Belgian board would be chock full. The import board would be chock full, and the American draft board, and you know, we're talking 20 years ago, would have
a couple two trees.
Just a couple two trees. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, I do spend a little time in your bar. You've actually combined the Belgian and import board, and the American board is chock full.
It is full up. And the main reason for that is Americans are making some really outstanding Belgian beers.
It is, yeah. Right?
I'm sorry, Laura. Belgian style beers, not Belgian beers. They're Belgian style because they don't come from Belgium.
That's right.
But there are some really good brewers making really good Belgian style stuff. So
there are. I think we can all agree that America is the hotbed of brewing right now.
I mean,
there's absolutely no country with the innovation. The sheer amount of independent craft brewers. I mean, and 20 years ago, we were the joke of the world.
Yep.
We
just had a conversation yesterday about some guy was like, so I've never been to Belgium. They make the best beer in the world, right? I'm like, they make some outstanding stuff, but we're doing pretty good too. And then we got in the conversation of caring about it. They don't clean their fucking beer lines.
Oh, I mean,
it's atrocious.
There's a very famous beer bar in Brussels. Listen, they're not listening. Delirium Cafe.
I've been there. They kept staring me down. They thought I was going to steal their book. Yeah. I don't want your menu, man. It's cool and all, but I'm not going to steal it. Quit eyeballing me.
They're breaking all the fucking rules we just mentioned. They got like a billion beers, and their draft system, which is all exposed, you know, is horrendous, right? I mean, the kegs are warm. They've got a weird you know, I don't know, the bundle like goes up around, you know, just unnecessarily. It's, you know, yet they are considered one of the best beer bars in the world, right?
Well, they have 2,000 bottles.
They have 2,000 bottles.
Isn't it just the wild yeast, you know, and the beer lines that really, you know, yeah. The, you know, isn't that what?
Yeah, the Rochefort yeast is just, it's great. Does really good things.
In their defense, a lot of those Belgian beers in bottles can last years. And, you know, it's funny. My first trip to Belgium was maybe 93. And I would go to these famous beer bars, and they would have three taps and, you know, 500 bottles. Because Belgium really was they weren't a draft culture. They were a bottle culture. And a lot of these breweries, like Duvel, you know, they didn't make draft beer. They only made bottled beer, and that's the way the Belgians like it. They think beer is better bottle conditioned. They might be right.
I think they are.
A lot of Belgian beers do taste better bottle conditioned, no question.
I take Chimay in the bottle over tap every day.
Hell yeah, and they change over time. They're designed to do that, and it's a really wonderful thing. But like you said, once America became the biggest consumer of Belgian beer in the early 2000s, all these breweries were like, oh shit, we got to make draft beer. We got to send it to the U.S. And it kind of filtered into their own home market of Belgium. And now there's bars with a whole bunch of taps there. But you're right, they're behind the times in draft maintenance and what it takes to maintain that system. You know, it's a living, breathing thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's daily. We daily tweak things on our draft system every fucking day. And a lot of people don't.
Yep, different beers are carbonated differently. Again, going back to caring, I think of New Orleans, and shame on me. I mean, I was on the strip, and like, holy crap, look at all those taps went in there. Most atrocious thing I've ever put in my mouth. It was vile. Like, oh, it's empty, and they have 100 taps. Yeah, I'm a moron. But then there's a great beer bar just out of the quarter, DBA, I think it was called.
There's DBA, and Avenue Pub is another great one down there. You know, one of my best friends has a bar down there. You know Boris?
Yep.
And he is having trouble with his draft lines, right? Here's how it works down there. And I'm sure they're not the only market that works this way. The beer distributor, cleans the lines. But they only clean their lines.
Which is illegal here in Chicago.
It's illegal here. But it's legal in a lot of different markets. And so he's got them coming in, and say he has three taps from this distributor. He's only cleaning those three taps. And he's not doing a very good job. And it's free, too, by the way. So Boris can't really complain that much. You know, like, so, you know, I said, well, why don't you just hire a line cleaning company? And he's like, there's no such thing, man. Like, there's no market for it. You know.
Who's going to pay?
Right. Try telling a bar owner who, you know, already knows dick about beer lines, that, you know, you need to pay someone to do something that's free at the moment. They're not going to do it, you know? I mean, we're bar owners. We're cheap fuckers, right? You know, and we're working on very slim margins.
It's a hard business.
Try to save every penny we can. And you're going to go there and say, yeah, you know, your draft lines taste like shit. I'm going to come and clean them every 2 weeks, and you got to pay me for it. They're like, fuck off. I'm not doing that. Oh, and you're going to take twice as long as the guy I got? Forget it. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, so, it's going to cost you a couple hundred bucks, by the way. So, yeah.
So he's going to, you know, he's going to learn to clean his lines himself, just like you did. And he'll be the only clean draft system in the city of New Orleans. Mid-City Yacht Club. Cheap plug. Go there. It's in Mid-City.
Say whatever we want, right?
Yeah, Boris isn't listening, that's for sure. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation and see where it goes, and probably have a couple more beers and see if we can't curse some more.
lady.